Hello everyone, welcome to NESG Radio. I am so pleased to have with me today Professor Perekunle Ereha and Mr. Wilson Erumebo. Professor Ereha is a professor of macroeconomics at the School of Management and Social Sciences, Pan Atlantic University. Mr. Wilson Erumebo is a senior economist at the Nigerian Economic Summit Group. So today we're going to be delving into exchange rate and inflation related topics. So I'm very, very pleased to have them with us today. Welcome, Professor Ereha. Welcome, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to be talking about two very, very key and important issues, particularly right now. So that's the inflation rate and exchange rates. So the NESG 2024 macroeconomic outlook emphasized the importance of achieving macroeconomic stability, of which we all know inflation and exchange rates are key determinants. So we'll just start off with looking into inflation. So sort of the trajectory over the last few years and some of the key areas bordering on inflation. Okay, so I think I'll start with you, Professor Ereha. So on inflation, we are aware of the very worrying climb, particularly in recent years, particularly between 2022 and 2023, where inflation hit an 18-year high, 28.9% in December 2023, up from 15.6% in January 2022. Can you just talk us through the main drivers of this monumental climb?
Okay, all right, good afternoon, and once again, thanks for inviting me. So let me start by saying that the first major driver of inflation for me is money growth. I say money growth because in 2015, for instance, when the Buhari government came on board, our money supply was probably about 21 trillion. By 2023, it moved to about 53 trillion. And currently, it's about 77 trillion. So, if you look at that it's arising from the ways and means, which sometimes we call monetization of deficit financing. And so, money growth is a major driver. And by the way, when a central bank or government refuses to anchor inflation, and over time, when inflation becomes persistent for a very long time, inflationary expectation becomes the actual inflation because money growth will be almost what economic agents with their expectation. So money growth is a major driver. And I'm talking about also money growth. One other aspect of money growth that we have in Nigeria is what we call exchange rate unification. You know, when we unify our exchange rate from about 450 to about 750, so whatever foreign exchange earnings that we're going to have, let's say $1 million, that would be about 300 million Naira, that will be printed by the central bank. So if you look at the central bank money supply, even when they were increasing MPR, you also find out that money supply or money growth was also increasing. So that's the number one driver. The second driver is inflationary expectation. When the central bank refuses to, or the government itself, both fiscal and monetary policy are unable to anchor inflation, it will be a major driver of inflation, because inflationary expectation will be a driver of inflation itself. I thought driver of inflation beyond the supply constraint that people talk about is what I call bridging the threshold of optimal scenario that is allowable. Yes, the central bank is allowed to finance, but that's what we call the optimal level of that. So when you go beyond that optimal level, then you are going to spur money growth, and that will drive inflation. And that is one of the issues that we have. The third one is unproductive fiscal spending from the government side that drives aggregate demand, especially when that spending is not productive in or leading to capital formation itself. And that will lead to expansionary, money itself, and that will drive inflation. And maybe my last point to be exchange rate pass-through, which is one of the supply constraints that we have, apart from insecurity that some persons will mention here and there. And then lastly, inconsistency on the part of monetary policy. And what do I mean? If you check Nigeria, monetary policy has been on the increase. Monetary policy rate has been on the increase from about 2022 to 2023, except the time that we suspended the MPC meeting. It has been on the increase. And you also check during that same period, there's increase in money growth. right? Or increasing money supply. You cannot be increasing MPR at the same time your money supply is increasing. It means even on one side you are applying contractionary monetary policy, on the other side you are releasing funds that are making money grow to increase. So that's that level of inconsistency as a way of reflecting in inflation, because inflation is also a measure of economic or policy uncertainty. So those are some of the drivers of inflation that we have, apart from the normal supply constraint that people mention, from flood, insecurity, and several other factors that people mention. And I think those are some of the things that we need to look out for if we want to resolve our inflationary issue at present. Thank you.
Great, fantastic. Thank you so much, Prof. Reha. Yeah, so you highlighted some very important drivers of inflation. So on your first part of money growth, anyone who took like undergraduate macroeconomics will be familiar with the sentence that inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon. And you've sort of highlighted that with, you know, like the ways and means, unproductive fiscal spending. But we also see that there are other things that also contribute towards, you know, inflation in Nigeria, like you highlighted the exchange rate pass-through as well. So thank you very much. Okay, so let's move on to Mr. Erumebo. So Mr. Erumebo, in your opinion, would you say inflation expectations have been anchored in recent times? So I know this is something that Prof just touched on. So would you say, like, you know, there have been, you know, some changes in the way inflation has been anchored? And would you say that this is important for controlling inflation in Nigeria?
Well, very interesting question. And I say interesting because over the last couple of months, we've seen how the central bank has, you know, re-emphasized the fact that inflation is one of their core, you know, mandates, and it's something that they are willing to control. And they've also, you know, come up with this idea or this approach of inflation targeting, which basically means that they will want to see inflation rates, you know, drop to a certain level, and that's their target. And what that also implies is that they will therefore see how they can use monetary policy tools like, you know, the MPR, other interest rates, you know, and other monetary policy interventions to see how they can navigate them to then achieve that inflation target. And so, you know, for the year, you know, or in the medium term, I saw a publication where the CBN is targeting something around 21.4% or thereabout, you know, for in inflation. And if you also look at the budget, that's also the same, you know, projection for inflation for this year, actually 2024 budget. But I think in terms of the expectation, right, it's still very high. Yeah, you know, I saw different posts where people are, you know, arguing that, look, if you expect that prices will go up, why are you even saving? Why not buy what you need to buy now? Because at the end of the day, if you keep saving and you don't have enough interest on your saving, you end up in the losing side. And so people are still, you know, behaving as if inflation will increase. People are, prices will increase. So people are, you know, trying to see whether if you can cut costs, they will take all those measures. For companies and the corporates, they are also taking all of these factors into consideration. So as much as we're seeing the shift in the policy side from the central bank to be able to rein in on inflation, I still think, you know, from the consumer investor side, the expectations are that, you know, prices will keep rising. And, you know, and of course, this has grave consequences on real income, you know, real income for citizens, and also real interest rates in terms of actual profit for investors. So, yes, there's been some shift within the policy circles, but that I don't think that is yet to translate. And especially when you then look at what inflation rate was, you know, especially in the last in December, the last figure that was available. So it trended upwards, still at, you know, 28.92%, and, you know, they estimate that this could even reach, you know, get to 30% in the year. Yeah, so in terms of inflation targeting, and I'll end with this point. I think, yes, it's very important for the CBN to have that, but I also think that policymakers, particularly the CBN, must also be aware of its limitation in addressing this inflation. You know, like Prof alluded to earlier, there are so many non-monetary factors that, you know, the CBN cannot really handle as far as inflation is concerned. And, you know, for inflation targeting to work, you know, there's countries, a few countries that have, you know, implemented these policies in the last couple of years. And one of the things, if you go through all of them, one of there are about three factors, you know, that they highlighted that has made inflation targeting work for them. You know, one of them is a well-functioning payment systems. How integrated are, you know, your transactions within the financial system itself? How much people use cash? How much people use, you know, specific finance, instrument, like access to credit and all of that. The other is a stable public finance. And that's where Prof, alluded to a lot, that if you have a very loose fiscal policy, inflation targeting will certainly be affected, yeah, especially in terms of the goal that you want to achieve. So the other is also, you know, monetary policy effectiveness, how you use interest rates and government buying securities and all of that to navigate, the market and expectations of people towards price, towards inflation. So the key message here is that inflation targeting, very good, very important, but is not just a thing for the central bank. There has to be that coordination between what happens within the central bank and also fiscal authorities. And in some countries, in fact, what happens is, for you to set that target, it has to come from both the Ministry of Finance and the central bank, especially in a country like Canada. You know, so those are the idea is not for the CBN to think that it can do this alone. There has to be that level of coordination and collaboration.
Great, fantastic. Thank you very much for that answer and for wrapping up for us very nicely. Okay, so I'll come back to Professor Reha. So Professor Reha, you may know that the IMF has predicted that Nigeria's inflation rate will decline to 23% in 2024 and 15.5% in 2025. So the question really is, what parameters do you think will bring this change about? I know that, for example, recently CBN has said it will halt the Ways and Means advances to the federal government. So maybe the IMF was already sort of seeing the policy stance of the CBN and, you know, had in mind that, you know, things might, you know, sort of get better in terms of inflation and inflation expectations. So in general, what parameters do you think, you know, would be necessary to sort of manipulate, to be able to get Nigeria on such an inflation rate trajectory?
Okay, yeah, thank you. Let me start with a background to your question on according to inflation rate expectation, because that is very critical to driving, you know, a declining inflationary path. I would say that we have not been able to anchor inflation, both from the fiscal and monetary side. If you look at the budget transparency data that is available in terms of Nigeria, and if you look at our budget targets or maybe development targets or all of the targets that we have given, we have always reneged in them. We will give targets from fiscal side, and we have never kept to them. We have never been committed to them. And on the monetary side, we have some level of credibility also, but in recent times, you find out that credibility has really gone out of the roof. So it then implies that we have a lot of issues to deal with regards to trust capital, right, which is nowhere to be found. So in terms of inflation, one driver of anchoring inflation is what I call good policy communication, which is that government must, on the fiscal and monetary side, must be able to communicate very well to the economy where economic agents will believe them. And that has to do with ensuring that there is transparency and credibility on the part of the government. So you commit to your announcement, which I call dynamic consistency. So what we have most times in Nigeria is dynamic inconsistency driven by, you know, policy announcement, and when it is time for the policy to be implemented, we renege those. And that sends a lot of signals to the economy, where economic agents will form their expectation because that announcement has been made. But when the time for that comes, then the government does otherwise. So for a simple case is, in the CBN Act, for instance, the rule says that you cannot give waste and means above 5% of your previous year revenue. That is one. The second is that, and which is an act, this is not just an announcement. The second one is that you must pay back, guys, you get a new one. But we violated all of that. So that sends a signal to the economy, and the economic agent will form expectation on that. And so when you are dynamically consistent like that, inflationary expectation itself become the actual, which drive actual inflation. And to anchor that properly is for us to communicate properly, transparently, and credibly be committed to what we have said, both in our rules and in announcement. And for me, I think that is so important if we must drive down inflation as IMF has predicted, from the over almost 28% to 23% to about 15% in 2025. For that to happen, we must be able to anchor inflation, and that by anchoring inflation, we must communicate our policy correctly, and we must have commitment to those policies, because that will send what I call credibility on the part of what we do as policymakers. That is one critical thing. The second thing that we need to build, what I call trust capital, which I've already said before. Why do I say so? You know, when economic agent trusts, you know, the government and the policy space or policymakers, what they send, it sends a good signal to them, and then it will attract both domestic and foreign capital. Foreign capital today is very critical, very, very critical to your what I call reserve accretion. And reserve accretion is very critical to exchange rate stability. And exchange rate stability has influence on your inflationary uncertainty that we've been having. Because when your exchange rate becomes stable, imported inflation can be controlled, and therefore we can have some stability around inflation itself. So driving trust capital is so critical. And that speaks to about the credibility issues also, and the transparency issue. And if that can happen, investors will come in, and then your domestic investors will have confidence in you. We can have some level of stability, both domestic and external. And that is very, very critical. The second point, if we have to achieve that as Nigeria, is that we must curb unnecessary money growth that is not targeted at spurring productivity. In the past, we have always had money growth that, you know, comes in from, not from capital inflows, but majorly from either from waste and means or from exchange unification. For instance, from 450 to 750, give you about 300 million. If it's a $1 million dollar foreign exchange that you have, foreign exchange earnings that you are having, that $300 million is money growth. But it has to go, even though we say it's revenue increase, but that money has to be channeled into capital formation, into productive infrastructure. And that is the only way we can reduce cost of production and increase productivity that will lead to stability in the economy. That is very, very critical. My last point is that food inflation in the basket of inflation, headline inflation, is huge. And food inflation in Nigeria is driven by high level of insecurity. And for us to curb that and control that to a pact that is stable over time as projected by the IMF, then we must curb insecurity. Issue by institution that drives us into the issue about ensuring that our security agents do what is expected in terms of government having the right signal to fighting, you know, the current threat of insecurity that is bedeviling the economy bedeviling the country across all states. And those are so important factors to think about beyond monetary policy that must ensure that the central bank is independent in terms of, you know, ensuring that we have less of what I call fiscal dominance, but more of central bank independence that will be able to give us monetary policy decisions that will be driven by evidence-based analysis that will be able to control inflation over time. If all of these are not in place, I doubt if that projection will come to pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that very exhaustive answer there. So the importance of transparency and credibility, you definitely emphasize that, and that's linked to, you know, anchoring inflation, building trust, etc. And then you also talked about, you know, how food inflation is driven by, you know, insecurity and the need to address that as, you know, like as a critical determinant of food inflation. Thank you very much. Okay, so we've already been talking about exchange rates and sort of how it's very closely intertwined with inflation. So we'll just sort of move over now and focus the discussion more on exchange rates. So this question is for Mr. Erumebo. So Mr. Erumebo, what would you say are the challenges of having multiple exchange rate windows? We know this, the central bank is trying to unify the exchange rate window. So what would you say, some of the driving forces behind this decision? Why, what are the challenges that exist when you have multiple exchange rate windows?
Well, one of the things that does is round tripping, which we're all, many are familiar with in Nigeria. The fact that you can, you have different windows and different rates, and you can get FX in one of the windows and then sell in the other, and you make profits overnight. And that in itself means that people can take advantage of the system, and it then also means that there are people who certainly need this FX for legitimate reasons that therefore would not be able to have access to it. So that in itself is one problem, and it also fuels this problem of scarcity and even widening the gap further. The other is also on the confidence level of the exchange rate, right? In many other countries, many citizens don't even pay attention to the news when you talk about exchange rate. Like it doesn't even make it to the news. Not because it's not important, but because of how much attention is given to exchange rates in Nigeria and how much dependent we are on whether it's import and many other things. So that level of having that case of having different markets, different rates here and there, also sends a signal of very weak confidence level as far as the rates are concerned. And mind you, we used to have this gap back in the day, especially referring to more recent time under whether it's the central bank governor under Professor Soludo and Sanusi. But the thing is, the gap is not as wide as we've seen over time. And part of when this issue started was towards the 2016 recession, when there were a lot of actions to ban activities in the official market, and that led to a spiral of rates in the unofficial market. And one of the key things that we need to note is that the moment you ban something in an official market, what you're basically doing is to indirectly legitimate the unofficial market, and then you create a market that maybe in the previous system does not even exist in the first place, or even if it exists, you make it more active. And that's what we've done. So as a correction measure, going forward, anything that then leads people to the unofficial market, I think are things that we must consciously stop and try as much as possible to ensure that we keep more inflows and supply into the official market. And interesting times, because the CBN has been reeling out some policies in the past couple of days, and especially in the last 1 month, which has in a way tried to bring some level of sanity to the market, even though we're still seeing that rates are declining at a very rapid pace. And one of them is urging bank to sell FX, excess of the FX they have in the market. The guideline on the IMTOs, International Money Transfer Operators, which ask them, and one key provision in that guideline is that they also need to ensure that the rates they use are reflective of the market rate, and also the removal of the spread on FX transactions in the interbank market. So what we then find is that as a result of these policies, we've seen a closure of that gap, especially between what is offered in the parallel market and then what is also offered in the official market. But the question is still on the supply, because I hold the view that yes, the CBN has a lot to do in managing the little we have, and even raising confidence levels so that more inflows can come in. But I think a lot needs to be done in getting supply into the official market. And by that, you know, I'm talking about whether it's FPIs, whether it's, you know, crude oil production, sales from crude oil and other mineral resources that Nigeria has. So just look at 10 years ago, we were producing 2.1 million barrels per day, you know, of crude oil, exporting to other countries, getting FX. 10 years later, which is in 2023 now, we're struggling with 1.3 million barrels per day. So it begs no question as to why wouldn't we have an FX problem, you know, when there is limited inflows. So yes, a lot going on, but then I still, a lot more needs to be channeled on how to improve the inflows and supply into the market. And as much as the CBN can, you know, regulate, you know, try to ensure people stick to the official rate, you know, incentivize players within the sector, all of those are short-term measures, but the main thing is to be able to attract those inflows from FDI, FPIs, you know, crude oil and, you know, exports and export of non-oil products and other remittances and other sources of FX.
Thank you very much, Mr. Arimobo, for that exhaustive answer. Okay, so we're still sticking with exchange rate windows, but I'll move over now to Prof. Ereha. So Prof. Ereha, we know that the CBN has sought to unify the exchange rate windows, and we've already heard why that's an important step to take. And it was envisaged that this measure would bring about greater liquidity and stability in the Nigerian FX market. But we've seen that that hasn't been the case, which Mr. Arimobo has also highlighted. So what factors would you say have been responsible for this observed divergence between, you know, what was expected and what the reality is?
All right. So it's simple. Let me start with a background to say that Nigeria fiscal policy stands today. Our fiscal policy stance is detrimental to balance of payments in Nigeria. And so the kind of fiscal policy stance that we take is mostly affect our balance of payment position. And so what then happened is that if you are operating a fixed exchange rate, you know, you have a balance of payment that is at deficit. What we call a flexible exchange rate, what happened is that the automatic adjustment to your exchange rate. Now, in the past, because we have always, you know, adopted what we call either the fixed exchange rate or the managed exchange rate regime, so even though our fiscal policy has been detrimental, because it's a managed floating system, we couldn't see the effect as it is now. Because it's either managed floating or fixed. And so we couldn't really see that effect, that widening effect that we are having currently. Because it is either a managed floating or whether a fixed exchange rate regime. Why was it so? Because as at that time, you know, we never had the oil theft that we have today. The current oil theft is so massive or substantial that even the rising price of crude oil, we never benefit from it. We never benefited from it in recent times, like in the past. So in the past, because we were having so much benefit from crude oil sales, oil price, and oil theft as we are having today, and we're producing, you know, oil production that was as high as more than above, almost about 2 million in per barrel, barrel per day. Fiscal impact was not that visible. However, in recent time, when the president came on board and said he's unifying the exchange rate, and we're not having the inflow as it should have from oil sales that we normally have in the past due to serious oil theft, what then happened is that we are exposed to the several years of, you know, the errors of our fiscal policy that we were covering up. So when you move to a flexible exchange rate, what then will happen in that economy is that your exchange rate does automatic adjustment on its own, because there was no managed float and there were no reserves to also manage it. And that was the regime that we now move to. Therefore, in such regime that we have, we mustn't have fiscal policy that is not going to be adversarial or to be back to balance of payment position. And what do I mean? Our current fiscal spending is at variance with the expectation of, you know, the unification that we did. Because when you have a unification or a devaluation policy, as it may be, what happened is that there must be what we call, you know, expenditure switching decision from both the household and the government, which means that things that you were importing before that has local production, you look inward to them. However, on the part of government, this is not the situation. What government is doing even currently now is that things that are locally produced, despite the fact that we have a local content policies and act and all of that, we still import them in high level. For instance, importing of vehicles for National Assembly and all of that. That put pressure on your foreign reserve. So with all of this, you know, this bank, if the fiscal side is not doing as it should be to do what I call expenditure switching to import substitution of what we were importing before, then the pressure will still be, and that will still, you know, lead to what we call the widening gap that we have. That is one of the key thing that has never allowed that to happen. The second thing is that I'm sure somehow, and I maybe Winston will know better, is that if you anytime FARC is released, there's always pressure on our reserve, which means that some of this money that comes in at FARC is converted to dollar, and such decision put pressure on our exchange rate. So if I am sure such policy has not been stopped, or maybe is about to be stopped. So we must do something around that to ensure that that conversion of our FARC, either from governors or other top political office holders, don't happen, because we are not going to spend dollar in our economy. So such decisions or such act, if they are still happening, might be a light while the liquidity is still suffering. The third one is that we still have shortage of supply because there are serious oil theft. And so in the short term to medium term, or in the short term is for us to curb oil theft, because the supply comes from majorly oil export, and that supply is still low. And also for the fact that we know quite well that the NNPC, me and you know quite well, most of the oil sales or has done what we call crude oil swap to loan, crude oil swap to pump, petrol and all of that. So we have less inflow of reserve or less inflow of foreign exchange. And that supply shortage is so significant that even with all of that, the liquidity is not coming as it should be. The other one is lack of confidence on the Naira as a store value. It's a critical thing. And because that confidence is not there, there is serious currency substitution, which we call dollarization. And that is also a major, and that sometimes leads to what you call undue speculation that is that we are seeing. And lastly, we have negative real interest rate. Our interest rate is negative in terms of real interest rate. We cannot have inflation that is above 28%, and currently our MPR is far, far less than that. So if you do the mathematics, you know that real interest rate is negative. And that has a way of affecting capital flows. And capital flows has implication of foreign reserve accretion that has capacity for us to stabilize our exchange rate. And since that is not happening, there is some level of distortion around the level of capital flows that we should have. And that is also another factor that is responsible for why these decisions of unification and all of these reforms have not yielded into the kind of liquidity and stability that we expect now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Prof. Okay, so we'll just talk a bit about something you raised earlier. So, you know, before you talked about sort of credibility, transparency. So, you know, the CBN seems to be trying to build confidence with some of its reforms that it's doing, you know, trying to sort of implement transparency measures, focusing on transparency and credibility, you know, such as through like clearing its FX backlogs. So it seems very keen to sort of restore confidence in, you know, the institution. So would you say that these sorts of measures would have a positive effect on, you know, the exchange rate stability that we're trying to achieve? You know, would it be a discernible effect?
Sorry, my answer is yes. It will definitely have the desired effect, right? Definitely. However, we need to follow it through going forward, because it's possible that, you know, sometimes we do this one-off policies, but we don't follow the policies through for a long time. And so you'll find out that the especially for instance, for the net opening position of banks and all of that, it's possible that we right, the banks would have gone back, or some of these people that the policies are meant for would have been doing otherwise. So we need to follow the policy through with proper regulation to ensure that that transparency we're expecting is there. That is one. Number two thing that I will say is that we need policy consistency for this to have effect. Policy consistency within monetary policy and also within fiscal policy. These two are intertwined. Because fiscal authority has implication of balance of payment, that has implication of foreign reserve to exchange rate. Therefore, policy consistency within central bank, within the monetary authority, and within the fiscal authority, and at the same time, across these policies are also very critical for this desired impact to be visible. That is so, so critical. However, on the medium to long term, I would say that spurring productivity for export-led growth is critical. And this can only happen when we have a structural reform that is guided by or lead to diversification of our economy, which is so, so critical to driving the supply that we need for all of these reforms that we are taking to take place. And in conclusion, I will say that trust capital, that build confidence in the economy, both at driving domestic investment or foreign investment or itself. Because capital flows look beyond return on investment. They also look at a lot of things with regards to confidence. They look at a lot of things with regards to what is happening to your reserve, because they must be able to repatriate their profit. So they look at a number of things beyond that. So confidence building is so, so important. Therefore, we must have proper communication. I underline the word good communication, because that is the only way we can anchor inflation, and that is the only way inflation itself will not be able to have the effect it has on exchange, because inflation itself has negative impact on exchange rate through cost of production, through purchasing power channel, those two channels to what you call your output, to your export, to your current account balance. So these are critical things if we want to have the desired effect on regards to exchange rate stability with the reforms that we are having. Thank you.
Thank you. Fantastic. Thank you so much, Prof. So I'll move back to Mr. Arumebo. So again, we're still talking about sort of the CBN's interventions and, you know, trying to sort of improve the functioning of the FX market, improve transparency, stability. Now we're going to talk about, you know, supply of FX in the market. So the central bank has taken some steps to increase supply, such as through intervening in the foreign currency exposure of banks via their net open position. So we will probably have seen the circular that was released very recently. So Mr. Emmerbo, do you expect that these measures are going to have a significant effect, or maybe that there are other things that the central bank might need to do with regards to the functioning of the FX market?
So we've already seen, that effect, you know, especially in the last couple of weeks, you know, and even the CBN also, in a way, we saw a depreciation in the rate, you know, more recently. There was a time the Naira appreciated a bit, and then as at yesterday or so, it's gone to 1,534 Naira, you know. And if you then check the apps, you know, especially some of these fintech apps, you know, that are being used by those living abroad to send money back to Nigeria. So you'd see that the gap between what's in the official market and, you know, what the apps then quote is very, very narrow, as opposed to initially when we would have 950 and then you have on the apps maybe 1,300 or 400. So we've seen that adjustment. So the CBN, there's been some depreciation in the currency, or would you call it devaluation, in the official market, you know, from 900 or thereabout to about 1,400. And then, so it's almost like creating that harmonization and then asking the apps, you know, and the IMTOs to use the official rate as, you know, the benchmark rate going forward. And so that has, in a way, stabilized the market in a bit. But again, we're still seeing significant depreciation of rates. So just a few days ago, the Naira was 1,430, you know, in the official market. Yesterday, it's 1,534, you know, as quoted by the FMDQ. So in a way, it just tells us that there's a lot more that needs to be done to build that confidence that we are talking about. And confidence is the currency of central bank. It's like, it's the reason why money is not coming into Nigeria as much as we expect, because the question is then, how do you then get it out? You don't want your fund to be trapped. And so whatever measures the CBN needs to take has to be to build that confidence and build it and keep it for as long as possible. Initially, one way to do that is to grow the reserves. You know, the more reserves you have, the more people think you can intervene in the market when needed, and then people have confidence. But we don't have that luxury now. And so what I think needs to be done going forward, you know, as I've mentioned earlier, focusing on all the other easy areas, quick wins that you can to get FX inflows into the market, you know, and then use that to be able to build the reserves. The CBN is saying we're, you know, in a very flexible market regime. You know, that's why you see the rates keep moving. But if that's the case, then you should use whatever reserves you have, whatever inflows you have, to build the reserves. And that means increasing oil production. We can't be struggling at 1.3 million barrels per day. We need to do better than that. We also need to include exports, non-oil exports, you know, and, you know, export of minerals and every other thing that can, you know, impact inflows. The other thing, and this may not directly be related to FX, but in a way it still comes back, you know, especially when we talk about liquidity in the system, is to, you know, stop ways and means beyond the statutory level. In fact, I would go further to say just stop it, whether it's 5% of previous year's revenue or whatever, just stop it for now. Because one of the measures of lack of independence of central bank is funding the fiscal authorities and funding fiscal deficit. And in fact, beyond even ways and means, if you check the data, you'd find that, you know, since 2018, credit to the government has grown faster than credit to the private sector. So what it means, so on average, you'd see that from 2018 to 2023, average growth of credit to the private sector is 20%. And then from the same period, 2018 to 2023, average growth of credit to the government is 47%. So whilst private sector is 20%, government is 47%. So it tells you how productive is that kind of economy. And you've seen how credit to the government has grown by 11 times, you know, almost 12 times within that short period, from 2015 to 2023. But credit to the private sector has grown just 3 times, you know, 3.3 times. So it tells you that a lot of unproductive financing is going on, and the CBN must not be a party to that, to funding or providing whatever funding to the government. That needs to stop. And the final point I'll end with is on improving transparency of the central bank, you know. And this is also linked to whether we're talking about the level of the reserves. You know, people have come out to ask, this reserve that we have, you know, $33 billion, some have said is even, you know, in the net is $3.7 billion, if you follow the report by JP Morgan. Some are saying is way lower than what we have now. The IMF has predicted that it's going to drop to $24 billion, you know, this year, even though I think that may not be the case. But the real question is on how do you improve transparency of the central bank itself, especially given how the path where we're coming from, where we've seen that the CBN has almost been used as a cash cow to fund, you know, activities of the government. So one of the key areas is, you know, and looking at what have been done elsewhere in other countries, is that CBN sometimes publish forecast of key policy rates to be able to build confidence. You know, where are interest rates going to be in the next 1 year, for instance? You know, at the end of the year, CBN, the central banks, would typically publish reports on monetary policy decisions and why they are taking, why, and justify, you know, the rationale for those decisions. You know, so how do you explain the conduct of monetary policy and exchange rate, and what are the reasons behind it? You know, so who audits the CBN? How is that done? You know, how much regular interventions, the audits, you know, are being done, you know, do the national audit or auditor general's office, you know, are they able to audit and ensure that, you know, the accounts are in proper places? So those are key areas, because as much as we argue for an independent central bank, what that also means is that if you must go independent, you must also be transparent and accountable to the country and to the people. So these are specific measures that I think in general can help improve confidence of the system, and not just confidence on FX, on also how the central bank is able to manage inflation. Finally, and I'll end this with this point, that we need something that, like a fiscal policy committee in Nigeria, where the central bank governor sits with the Minister of Finance and key economic ministers to set targets for the economy, whether it's on inflation, particularly on inflation, and see how they can work together to achieve those targets. And I'll give you an example. So, for instance, whilst the CBN is targeting, you know, much lower inflation rate, there are calls for government to increase minimum wage and to raise wage levels. What's the impact of that potential wage increase on inflation? Who is looking at that? You know, is that something that I think needs, you know, discussions of both and partnerships and collaboration between monetary and fiscal authorities? And the fiscal authorities also need to curb excessive spending, you know, and target expenditures to productive areas. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Umebo. I found your recommendation on stopping ways and means be a very brave one. I think many people would actually agree with that. So thank you. So yes, thank you so much to Professor Reha, Mr. Umebo. Professor Reha has had to leave us because he has another engagement. Mr. Umebo, thank you so much for joining us. It was definitely a very, very interesting conversation.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you. To listen to other episodes, we would love you to visit our website, nesgroup.org/podcast. Thank you to our listeners. I've been your host, Shay Vincent. Until next time, bye for now.